Welcome to Field Interference. This is your host, Ryan G. Today, I want to discuss logic and critical thinking. I have witnessed a serious flaw in our current culture. In general discourse, I see a lack of discernment and evidence-based thinking. Many want to jump to a conclusion because of the way they feel about a certain topic or the way they might be viewed by others. There is a problem in making assertions in the absence of data, whether negative or positive. For example, if people promote the existence of extraterrestrial life and support this idea by showing images of flying saucers as evidence, he or she would be perpetuating a non sequitur, meaning it does not follow that a flying saucer is evidence of extraterrestrial life. Conversely, if a person claims that no extraterrestrial life exists, supported by the fact that he or she has not seen evidence of such beings, that is not evidence that no such beings exist. I have seen a similar line of reasoning flowing from the Sandy Hook hoaxer community, which promotes the idea that no shooting occurred based from the fact that they have not seen dead bodies. This is a non sequitur. My guest today, Deanna Spingola, is a radio host and author. She has just released her latest book entitled The Ruling Elite: Death, Destruction, and Domination. This is the third book in her Ruling Elite trilogy. Deanna's website is spingola.com, and you can find her radio broadcast at republicbroadcasting.org and americanfreepress.net. Hi, Deanna. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Excuse me. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm good.
So, I have been receiving, I posted your video where you interviewed Wolfgang Halbig on my YouTube channel. I just think that there's so many comments here that could be, we could talk about, but I wanted to bring you on the show to let you respond to this criticism, and so I want to ask you, have you personally received any criticism that related to Sandy Hook, and what kind of criticism have you received?
Well, that's I've received personal criticism from people who have emailed me, and of course I think that I've also had public criticism, such as in the forums. And I don't really spend a lot of time looking at that criticism. I do believe that well, it's speculation at this point, but it seems pretty strange to me that I was on RBN for 3.5 years talking about some very, very controversial things. I've talked about numerous things for 3.5 years. But the minute that I started talking about Sandy Hook, I was relegated to the weekend. I went from a 10-hour program, 2 hours per day, Monday through Friday, to a 3-hour program on Sunday afternoon. And I just think that that's, is it a coincidence? I don't know.
Well, so you're only speculating that those two events might be connected, but in reality, the one event followed the other. You started questioning the Sandy Hook hoaxer movement, and RBN seems to have hosts that promote that Sandy Hook was a hoax, and they moved you to a marginal schedule of a Sunday program. So I think that very well those two may be connected. But other than from your radio broadcast, have you received any any criticism from your listeners or from other radio hosts?
Oh, definitely, sure. I have. I'm not willing to give out names or anything. And a lot of the emails that I have received have been from listeners. And, well, I have received some phone calls from people who have been guests on my program who are very, they've been in the movement for quite some time. And I have had lengthy discussions. And one gentleman who called me and said, "What the heck are you doing?" kind of a mentality. Why would you criticize Sophia Smallstorm and her video? And I said, "Well, have you actually looked at the video with critical thinking skills?" And I pointed out some of the things that were, well, deceptive. The use of looped film to try to claim that people were just wandering around the firehouse without really doing anything. They were just going in one door and out the other door. And I pointed out to him that it was a looped film, and all he had to do was look up in the left corner of the film, and you could see the gray van actually going forward and then back and forward and back and forward and back. And he said that, okay, he said he would look, but then after he watched the video, he said, "Oh no, I still believe that it was a hoax, and I still believe in Smallstorm's video." And then I had another gentleman who runs a he runs a CD operation where he or DVD operation where he films various he remakes videos and then sends them out for a dollar a piece or something like that. And he called me and he said, after he had read my first and second part of my critique called Unraveling Sophia Smallstorm's Video on Sandy Hook, part one, part two, part three. And he said, "Wow," he said, "that is really interesting information." And he wanted to talk to me about it, so we talked for, I don't know, a half hour about it. And a week later, he he released her film, said it was the best film that he'd seen.
Wow. It amazes me that adults, supposedly thinking adults, can watch that film and see that she... makes any real good points. I watched that and I saw that it was loaded with non sequitur arguments. She says, "Look over here, look over there, and so this means it was all a hoax." There, I see that she's starting with a conclusion, and she goes cherry picking data to support that conclusion rather than starting with the data and letting the evidence lead her to the necessary conclusion. And to be honest, this goes a lot deeper than Smallstorm or How Big, as well as Jim Fetzer has been a huge player in all of this. I think that people today are going around the internet, especially on my YouTube video, and they are commenting with basically this is what I'm hearing from them, that you must believe that this is a hoax or you are a fraud, you
right.
are somehow promoting the lie. Just because I don't believe what you believe, that doesn't mean that I'm working for somebody or that I'm just a free thinking human being that and I think that I allow evidence to lead me to my conclusions. I don't like this idea that we are going to draw assumptions and then cherry pick data to support those assumptions.
Exactly. And most of the, well, a lot of the information that is in her video was created, I believe, according to what I can gather, during the ConCon conference in June of 2013, before the final report was out, and I do not understand how people can draw these conclusions without the formal official investigation being over. And of course, we do need, if we're going to counter what the government is saying, then shouldn't it be imperative that we look and see exactly what it is that the government has said in the official reports? And a lot of the information, well, when you look at the information that has come out that has helped people to reach conclusions or has assisted people in believing what they believe, came out within a week or two, or with at least within 6 weeks after the event. And that is really, really, really soon. I mean, we had people talking about what happened. Well, even in the with the Robbie Parker interview, which occurred the day after. Now, people would have to understand that Robbie Parker, because of his religious affiliation, is a unique individual. He is not an actor. He is a Mormon. And Mormons have a different perception on death and life than a lot of other people. And he gave an interview, a press conference, on the day after. He was at the church, his church, and came out of the building. And he was probably there, I don't know, it's a lot of times when something really bad happens to you, you gain strength from other people by helping them. A lot of times when something bad happens to you, people around you are just, they're very tearful, they're very sad, and they are trying to buoy you up. And in turn, the victim, Robbie Parker in this case, the victim's father in this case, was trying to buoy them up. I mean, it was just, that is what religious people do. They get together, they draw strength from each other. And so he goes out to deliver his thoughts, this press conference, and I believe it was just under 20 minutes. And yet somebody, during that press conference, taped or videotaped, probably using their telephone, videotaped part of his message, perhaps the part where he was just before he stepped up to the microphone. Now, keep in mind that he is going to be talking to the press. He's going to be talking about probably the worst event that's ever happened to him in his entire life. And I know that when I've had to talk about a very sensitive subject, and certainly we've all had times where we've had to talk about something that was very, very close to our hearts, that made us kind of weepy. We had to really kind of, okay, I've got, trying to gather strength here that you can do this. And that is what I think that he was doing. He wasn't, what somebody said, oh, he was hyperventilating. He was trying to get into character. No, he was trying to gather the strength to say what he had to say without standing there bawling at the microphone, which is probably what he really, really was afraid he would do. And for somebody in that audience to just film and then somebody else just use out of context a small portion of that film to make the claim that this was all a hoax and that he was an actor is just egregious beyond belief. Because if you look at the entire press conference, it was soul-searching, it was provocative, it was he was talking about his little girl that had been murdered needlessly along with 19 other kids. He shed tears. That was not an act. And anybody who claims it was an act, they just didn't listen to the whole thing. And so you would have to think, okay, CNN was there. I don't know what other, probably every major network, every major, journalist that was in the area or that went to the area was there. Well, which one of them, who filmed that section and who then promoted it, saying that he was an actor? Now, there are people in the so-called alternative media who claim that this person is an actor and this person, they claim that everybody is an actor. And, in fact, one person said that I was really Victoria Jackson and had pictures of myself and Victoria Jackson, who used to be apparently on Saturday Night Live. I'm not familiar with her, know nothing about her, but I'm not her. And he said for certain, absolutely for certain, that I was Victoria Jackson and that my name, Spingola, wasn't my real name, but that my goal was to spin. And I came up with this name. And honestly, if that was my goal, would I really just decide that that would be my name just to give myself away?
I think you're making a very worthwhile point here that what I like to call the Sandy Hook hoaxer logic seems to not border on any kind of physical data. It seems to simply consist of guesses and tying together supposedly coincidental ideas. And for instance, using your name, I mean, just because it sounds similar, that there's some kind of hidden message. Just because you have a certain name and it sounds a certain way, that the hidden message is just right there. It's hidden in plain sight. Well, I gotta say, going back to the Robbie Parker idea, the fact that somebody is not crying because you expect that, oh, well, they lost a child, so wouldn't they be crying? Well, for one, we only have so many tears that we can physically give. Who knows how much he was crying before that incident. But the truth is that even if he's not crying, that may be evidence that somebody's not crying. That may be evidence of an unexpected emotional reaction to a tragic event. But that's not evidence that the event didn't occur. It's not evidence that he didn't have a child that died.
Exactly.
And I see very clearly that these people need you or desire for others to believe that that the conclusion that there was no shooting event necessarily follows from the fact that they don't see people crying. I think that is a major flaw in logic.
Of course. Well, in fact, I think probably a lot of the listeners will remember that Andrea Yates killed her five children, drowned her five children in the bathtub on June 20th, 2001. And she had been suffering from severe postpartum depression. And her husband, Russell Yates, gave an interview the day after. He didn't cry either. That doesn't mean that he wasn't sad. That doesn't mean that he didn't love his five children. It just means that during that interview, he held back his tears and gave the interview, gave the press conference. It doesn't mean what people would like to attribute it to mean.
Right, and I would have to say that, that's the real problem, is we have to look at what we're seeing and comment on that particularly. If we're going to talk about somebody not crying, then we could talk about that. But the problem that becomes increasingly clear is that these people want to make a conclusion that no shooting occurred. And then they go back and they have to find very unfounded points about this emotional reaction. I heard of this girl, Kate
Slater.
I thought it was Kate Slate, but yeah, Kate
Slate.
Slate.
Okay, Slate. Okay,
yeah, maybe that's it. So, Kate Slate, she called in to a radio show. I believe it was with C.W. Wade. And she said, well, I did not see one tissue at the crime scene. And she was using this as her main support for why there was no shooting event. And I see this girl also commenting all over the Sandy Hook videos on YouTube. And it's just amazing to me that because she didn't see one tissue at the outbreak of this event, she necessarily concludes that there must have been no shooting. I could repeat this till the cows come home or what have you. But the truth is that she wants to make a conclusion that is completely unfounded. Just because there was no tissue, does that mean that no shooting event occurred? And I'd love to hear from Kate. I'd love to see what she has to say on that one. I don't see much logic going on in her head.
Right. Certainly. I saw some tissues. I guess it just depends on which videos or which images you choose to to look at.
Right,
because were a lot of tissues.
When you're being selective about what you're willing to believe, then you might also be selective about what you're seeing. So
sure.
if there were tissues, she may not be willing to see it. And
sure.
I see a similar problem on my comments page when these people say that when you claimed that you saw a picture of Don Hochsprung's body at the crime scene,
mm-hmm.
that I see people claiming that you are a liar, that there was no picture of Don Hochsprung's dead body.
And you did provide a link to C.W. Wade's video called The Deadliest Minute, in which he did blow up it was the Walkley number 88 picture image, and he blew that up, and you can see the body there. And of course, then somebody would say, okay, so that's a body. But they probably just had somebody lay down and then they shot that picture. You know? So it doesn't matter with some people. They choose to believe what they want to believe. And it wouldn't matter if you dug up bodies and presented them at their front door. They wouldn't believe it.
It seems that they keep saying, you must jump this high. You have to achieve some higher level of evidence always. There's no amount of evidence that's enough for these people.
Right.
Anyway, we will be right back. This is Field Interference, and I am interviewing Deanna Spingola. We're back. I'm here with Deanna Spingola, and we are discussing Sandy Hook and the lack of logic that we see from the what we are calling hoaxers.
Right. Now, we had talked before the program, and we were talking about my interview on March 9th of Wolfgang Halbig, and I have had, a fair amount of criticism regarding that interview. Some people have said, oh, you were just terrible, you talked over him, and you didn't allow him to talk. He would ask a question, or you would ask him a question, and then you'd say, before he could answer it, you'd say, oh, we got to take a break, and you wouldn't let him answer it. Well, in radio, particularly commercial radio, there are set patterns there. There's set commercial breaks. And you have to abide by those breaks. You can't, you know, the music starts playing. It's all set up automatically so that the music starts playing. You have 30 seconds before you're cut off and the commercial starts, because all these commercials are pre-recorded. They are set to start at a particular time. And so I didn't just arbitrarily say, oh, commercial, we can't, you can't talk. We got to go to commercial break. So that is not a fair criticism of the interview. And additionally, I do admit that I was rather out of character in that interview. People have mentioned that, and I agree. I was out of character. But I had had some interaction with Mr. Halbig before. I had actually scheduled a special interview, one of what I call the Spingola specials, where I was going to call him on Friday afternoon. And we were going to have a nice interview, commercial-free. It was going to be pre-recorded. It wasn't live. And I checked with him, and he had emailed me a couple times before that asking if we could please be friends, and because he knew that we seemed to be on opposite sides of this issue. And so he emailed me on February the 11th and asked me to be his friend. And I mean, I just, you know, I knew that that was just kind of a ploy to, I don't know. I don't know what his thinking was. But anyway, so we arranged this interview on Friday before the Tuesday that I actually did interview him. I called his house. Called his telephone and didn't get an answer. So he stood me up on that interview. And I thought about it, and so I called him on Monday and I said, gosh, I hope you're okay. I was kind of worried about you because you didn't answer the phone. And he said he had to go somewhere. Now he knew my email address because he had emailed me before. He could have emailed me and said, and could have said, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to make it. I don't know. This is speculation, and I'm always willing to say it's speculation because I really don't know. But my views are that he did not want to engage me privately. And I suspect that in a live interview that you can get text messages, you can get help from other people, whereas in a one-on-one interview with that isn't live, that you're just on your own. You're there. You have to interact without any outside help. So I am thinking that that might be the case. So anyway, I called him on Monday and I said, how about tomorrow? Would you like to be on my RBN program? It's live. And he said, yes. So he was on my program. And people have accused me of picking on his past. And one person in your comment section said, well, we don't care if he was a bad businessman. Well, you know what? It wasn't the fact that he was a bad businessman. It was the fact that he lied about. He said on his website, he said that he had a suite. He gave the address for the suite where his office was, and it turns out that it was the a post office box at the local UPS store. And when initiated the conversation, I said, well, I understand that you have this website and did you do it yourself? And, you know, I asked him about the address, and then he said, oh, he said, that's not my address. That was the executive officer's address. And I said, well, isn't that really the UPS store, the address of the UPS store. And then he said, oh, well, we don't need an office. But so what I was demonstrating was that this man is a liar. At least he lied about that. Well, if he lied about that, what else is he lying about? The other thing that bothered me, and I don't like liars, but the other thing is that he used references for that business that he just put up, just a short time before. He used people who were dead before he started, before he put up that website. He's using dead people as references. That's so deceptive. So how can we trust this man to represent us to find answers? He said that he was a certified school safety expert, and anybody can become a certified school safety expert by taking this short little test on the internet. You can get a certificate that says Emergency Management Institute, FEMA. This certificate of achievement is to acknowledge that, you know, Mr. Smith has reaffirmed a dedication to serve in times of crisis, and, you know, on and on. And so I put his the certificates online, and I just feel that there's just too many questions about his background. So
right, and well, I mean, just to reiterate your points, I mean, with labeling the address for his office, and then saying, "Well, that's not mine; that's someone else's." Then saying, "Well, we don't need an office." He's speaking out of both sides of his mouth.
He is then
turning around and telling people that he, well, I mean, you were speaking of that he has references of people that are deceased.
Right.
How was who were these people? How was he referencing them?
Okay, and this was information that came from Poseidon, and this was, he posted this on March 6th. He posted it before, but he was referring to Fetzer's expert, because Jim Fetzer is the one that contacted Wolfgang Halbig. He thought, oh, this is a school safety expert. He seems to be, well, apparently he was on the same side, thinking it was a hoax and whatnot. But he referenced on his website Gloria M. Lunsford, and this woman, she was a teacher in Raleigh, North Carolina, died on May 5th, 2009. Now, he put up his website. When did he put it up? He put it up in October. It was up by, by August 18th. And, And she had died in 2009. So how could she be a reference for his business that he didn't create until October 29th, 2012?
Wow.
Another person that he used as a reference was Mrs. Michelle Tegland, who worked at the Harlem Public Schools here in Chicago. She died on October 14th, 2011. He used her as a reference for his business that he did not start. The website domain was not created till October 29th, 2012. And she died a year earlier in 2011. So how could these people be references for a business that he started, you know, after their death?
Well, yeah, it seems that he's using fraudulent names to try to make himself look more official.
Right. And then after our interview on March 7th, our interview was on, March 3rd, March 4th. It was March 4th. On March 7th, 3 days later. He posted the following on his Facebook page. One of my best business partners quit his job with the Children's Safety Institute because I am involved, as he says, in this conspiracy theory on Sandy Hook. And it is not good for our company since I was taking donations, which has nothing to do with CSI, Children's Safety Institute. He does not understand, and it is connected to autism. He writes kind of different for an educated person. People are afraid, and I can see why. He is the key, so he leaves, and now I have lost my job because we are a team. I am fired, but I might as well be, because without him, I've lost my job because our company is a team. Anyway, what he's saying is that he lost his job. Did he have a job? Was it a website? He took down that website on March, right after our interview. Now, why do you think he would take down this website with all this false information on it if, in fact, it wasn't, you know, kind of significant?
Wow. So he literally took it down, right? Or, I mean, the day after the interview?
He posted this message on March 7th. And our interview was on March 4th, so 3 days after our interview, when I exposed him as having lied about his current activities and his current business, he took the website down and then claimed that he had lost his job. Poor me, poor me, poor me, I've lost my job.
Wow. It seems that he does make this whole investigation about himself, what he knows, what he's seen, what he knows about autism. You were just saying it seems he starts talking about how he was fired, and then right in the middle he just sticks in it was about autism. I don't know what that's about, but it just seems that he's obviously lacking in any sort of linear logic. Something is definitely off here, and I don't see why people give their trust to Halbig. But then I noticed that his theories have taken a life of their own, because people on my page say, oh, here we go, Super Go Get 'em, they always have funny names, says, I believe two things. Sandy Hook was most likely a hoax, and Halbig is most likely a fraud.
Okay. but all right, and what is his reasoning? I can see that. Yes.
They have no reasoning. He doesn't even give one. That's the whole sentence there. The thing is that people are now using your interview as a way to attack you. They attack your voice, they attack like you said, your name. And they also, I see so many comments that center around this one single idea of we have no images of Hawksprung's body. We need image. You know, this guy says, excuse me, Spingola, you could solve and end the whole truther hoaxer debate in 3.2 seconds by simply putting a link to the photo where you claim Hawksprung's body is clearly seen. I mean,
which you did. You posted the link, and the image that I was referring to was N.C.W. Wade's film, and there it is. Now, did that end the hoax? Did that end everything? Do people now believe that it didn't happen because that image is posted? Gosh, I don't think so. I bet he still believes that it was a hoax.
Well, the thing that I noticed, because after looking at the image and seeing their comments, you know, it seems that, you know, they create this tall order that, well, we need to, you know, either see her face or, you know, it needs to be a close up. So because there's an image that shows bodies and that it is claimed that that is Hawksprung's body, they will not believe it unless there is something clearly showing her characteristics. I don't think that there's a reason why they deserve to see personal images of dead bodies. It doesn't happen at every crime scene where
no,
where
but
they
you know where
show that.
But you know, we are all programmed, because on TV programming, we get to see all of the scenes, we get to see the blood and the guts, and we are programmed. The general public is programmed to, and they are desensitized. They expect to see the blood and the guts and the death and the tears and all of these emotions, the raw emotions. Is that's because TV programming has indicated, has indoctrinated us to see all this stuff. And but this isn't real life, people. It's on TV. It doesn't mean that that is the policies that occur in real life. Now, at Columbine, gosh, some people didn't see the images. They only saw a picture of their child the day after. And people are just, there's something about Sandy Hook that is very different from any other school shooting. The other school shootings all have to do, are all committed by people who attended the school that they committed their crimes in, the mass shootings in. Sandy Hook was different. We are talking about first graders. We're talking about 20 kids, children, little kids who were slaughtered. Totally different. And so there would have been a massive outcry unless there was some sort of damage control put in place. And the other thing that it strikes me as being so bizarre are these people, these hoaxers, are claiming that, okay, you have actors. So you have 40 actors that are playing the parents. You have the police department, the Newtown Police Department, and of course they hired actors for all of that. And the newspaper, well, you know, the Newtown Bee, those are all a bunch of actors. And all the grandparents and the aunts and the uncles, and those were all actors. Oh, and by the way, any witnesses like, who was that? Rosen, he was an actor. And it's all a big farce. When in fact, wouldn't it have been much easier? And this has happened in the past. The American Psychiatric Association allied with the CIA to create a Manchurian candidate back in the 1950s. They know how to do that. Wouldn't it have been a lot simpler to just program Adam Lanza, to have him do what he did, and you wouldn't have to worry about actors or anything else? Why would they go, as the hoaxers claim, why would they hire all of these people and do all this great big facade if they could have done it a lot easier? And people who, and all the kids, what about all the kids? Are they going to, were they all actors too? Were the 496 students that went to that school, would they keep it a secret? Did somebody sit down with them and say, okay, now, you know, this is the story. And is everybody going to keep this all a big secret? It would have been a lot easier just to do a Manchurian candidate and do the whole operation if it were an operation, if it were a hoax.
Just including all these people, you're going to have about 80, maybe even 100, 200 people that are actors trying to perpetuate this lie. It seems that that would take way, way too much effort versus actually creating a shooting event. And
exactly.
And what I see as the response is that, well, they, you know, why, you know, obviously this is remaining in the realm of theory, but if this is all a hoax, if these are all actors, why would they have done this? The reason I see put forward is, well, for gun control, to you know, perpetuate policies of gun control. Well, I don't really, not only do I not see much gun control coming from this event particularly, but I see that you could do this with a real shooting event, so why create a fake shooting event? And now I see the same logic that there are actors, that these are fake shooting events. I see it being applied to more recent events.
In fact, one of the gentlemen, one of the people who created a website on that day, on December 14th, 2012, created a website. Let me just find it here in my unraveling part one. He said, literally, where did he say? He said that he did not, on December 21st, Jay Johnson, on his website, Sandy Hook Hoax. Okay, he created it December 21st. Said, okay, it's a week after. And I quote, "I think the idea of a young man shooting kids for no reason is a black op type psychological operation and did not happen and is therefore a hoax," unquote. Okay, so there you go. He summed it up in one sentence.
I think, therefore, it is. That's what I heard. And
yes.
I think that is a very self-righteous approach to understanding information. The truth does not rely on how a person sees it. The truth is the truth, no matter who speaks it and no matter where it's seen.
And somebody else said the day before on his website, and I quote, "At this point, it is safe to say that the official narrative of the Sandy Hook school shooting is fraudulent and a major cover-up and PSYOP is underway," unquote. How can you say that 6 days after the fact? How can you say that my goodness, 6 days later and somebody's saying that it's safe to say that the official narrative of the Sandy Hook school shooting is fraudulent? Who the heck is this guy that he can come up with that?
It seems like the bigger hoax here is in how quickly people can jump to conclusions and how easily people are swayed by groupthink and
mm-hmm.
people that frame the debate, like Wolfgang Halbig or Jim Fetzer. They're able to take our minds and divert them into only what they want to discuss, and they want to make us believe that there is a hoax here in the absence of data. And I think that is the main problem in this whole controversy. And I want to say thank you, Deanna, for coming on the show and doing this interview.
Oh, well, thank you so much for asking me. It's been very interesting looking at how people perceive things. And, the truth is the truth. And certainly we need to evaluate what the truth is and not adopt what others would have us believe.